Welcome back to Blueprint for Living. I'm Michael Williams. And coming up this half hour, we're continuing today's fascination with technological aids for better living. We're asking some tough questions about the rise of so-called smart houses. How much responsibility are you comfortable ceding to your household gadgets? But before that, we're big in Japan. This week's Sense of Place takes us to the island of Okinawa on the recommendation of Adam Liao. Let's listen to a bit more of that Shimamuta. That's the traditional folk music of Okinawa. It's a strange thing, isn't it, when you visit a foreign land and feel instantly at home. My Sense of Place guest last week, writer Hanny Rayson, felt it when she went to Molyvos on the Greek island of Lesbos. And my guest today also felt it on an island a very long way away from home. Adam Liao is host of Destination Flavour on SBS. You know the show, that's the one that simultaneously gives you itchy feet and a rumbling stomach. Adam, welcome to Blueprint.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. Tell me about where you were when you developed this feeling of belonging.
The place where I guess I felt most at home, which is strange because I only visited there for the first time, I think, when I was in my mid-20s, was where that music is from. It's an island in the very south of Japan called Okinawa. Actually, more correctly, it's a group of islands in the south of Japan.
So what took you there in the first place? You were living in Tokyo, I understand?
Yeah, I was living in Tokyo, and I'm probably in my second year there. I just had some friends who were going away, taking a weekend away to a bit of an island getaway. In Japan, they have this thing where if it's your birthday, you get very cheap airfares with some of the airlines there.
Wow, so that's
for $10. Yeah, for $10, you and a couple of friends can go away somewhere, and it's really great because if you've got enough friends and enough birthdays, you can go just about anywhere. So for just a couple of bucks, we went down to Okinawa and spent the weekend there, and it really clicked with me, the whole place.
I'm so enamored with that idea of airlines doing that. I hope some Australian airlines are listening, and that's the way to go. So instead of this being like a rural airport, though, it took you to a place that was pretty special. Tell me about your first impressions of it. What was it that first caught your eye?
I mean, I come from the islands generally. My family's from Hainan Island in the south of China. I was born in Penang, which is an island in the west of Malaysia. And then I guess I grew up in the world's biggest island, Australia. So going to Okinawa, the main island of Naha, we sort of landed and it didn't feel like this far-off beach destination. It felt very much like coming home. It's really hard to describe. And the food really resonated with me, and the people, and the sights, and everything just felt right.
So you'd spent 2 years in Tokyo at that point. Did it feel vastly, like a vastly different sense of Japanese culture you got once you were out of the capital?
Completely different. You know, Okinawa has a really rich history. It wasn't even part of Japan, I think, until the 1900s. So it was before that, it was associated politically with China. Before that, it was an independent kingdom that had trade routes all throughout Southeast Asia. And so the atmosphere there is very much one of a mix of cultures. And that kind of reflects, I guess, my own personal background. I guess in the later part of the 20th century, it was occupied by the US, and some people would say still is today.
So tell me a bit about physically what it's like. I have to say, I have read some slightly uncomplimentary descriptions of the main city.
Yeah, nobody much likes Naha. Okinawa is, I think it's about 600 different islands, from the very small to the very large, and some completely uninhabited. So a lot of the resorts are that Maldives type of thing. I don't know quite how else to describe it. Crystal clear water, white sand beaches, maybe a hut sitting somewhere and some smiling locals are around doing not much at all. But Naha gets this awful reputation for being this... It's not a big city. It's only less than 100,000 people, I think. But it's concrete and blocky and there's not much there. And it's pretty ugly, you have to admit, by any standards. But I really like it. You know, I love going to the islands, but Naha itself it's pretty vibrant, you know. It's not like Honolulu. It's not like Singapore. It's kind of like an ugly city in the middle of paradise, and there's something about that character that I really like. You've got GIs walking down the main street, you've got a McDonald's on the corner and a Starbucks on the other, but then you've still got these wonderful Okinawan wet markets, and you've got really great little local restaurants there, and you've got holiday makers mixing with fishmongers. And so there is that vibrancy that I think a lot of people, when they go to a tourist destination, they like to pretend like there's no tourists there, even though they are the tourists. But to me, Naha just shows Okinawa for what it is.
I love the idea of an ugly city in the middle of paradise. That's such a lovely idea. So you mentioned the GIs. Is there still a strong military presence there? Is there a university? What gives it that vibrancy?
There are many military bases, both Japan's Self-Defense Force and American as well. And so you do have this interesting food scene where outside the bases you've got young Japanese people making American-style hamburgers but doing them with a bit of a Japanese twist. You've got local dishes that have developed as a result. You know, one of the most famous dishes is taco rice, which is, the story goes, they sent over all these rations to the American military, and all the taco shells broke, so they were left with the taco seasoning but nothing else. And so they had the American cheese, the taco seasoning. They basically just made a taco but served it on rice rather than in a taco shell.
Oh, and that's fantastic.
It's one of my absolute favourite dishes. It really is. It's delicious.
It seems like a perfect illustration of that melting pot point you were making, though, about the kind of cultural influence in there. Is that borne out across the cuisine there?
It really is. You know, I guess the influence has been there for so long. From the very beginning, you've got the national or the regional dish of Okinawa is something called Goya Champuru. And even the word Champuru is an Indonesian word, Champur, which means mix. So it's Goya, which is a winter melon, mixed. And it's this kind of stir fry of some would say pork and bitter melon and egg and tofu. And it's delicious. But that dish goes back 1,000 years from when they used to have trade relationships with Java, and now it's kind of modernized through the post-US occupation period, so that instead of pork or vegetarian version, it's most often served, including Spam, which came over with the American influence.
And I understand that got you into a bit of trouble. You got that recipe from an 80-year-old Okinawan grandmother, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, when I did Destination Flavor Japan, that was our final episode. It was my favourite place in Japan, so I said, you know, this has to be our final
episode. Presenter's privilege.
Yes. And I got a lot of angry mail from people that had watched the whole series. We tried to be as faithful to Japanese culture as we could, tried to make a show that was appealing both to Australians and to Japanese people, and I think we absolutely achieved that. It's gotten really great reviews. But just that final episode, it was, you've ruined a great series by showing Spam and taco rice and these kind of American-influenced dishes rather than showing the real Okinawan cuisine. And, you know, I don't respond to that kind of criticism because it doesn't really help anyone. But my feeling on it was always, that is real Okinawan cuisine. I don't get to dictate to people how they should cook. I mean, I think she was about 88 by that point, actually. We just said to her, please cook a dish that you think sums up Okinawa. And she pulled the Spam out, she pulled out the tofu and the bitter melon, and she started making Goya Champuru. And I'm not going to say to this woman, I'm sorry, what you think your culture is not going to resonate with our audiences, so you have to change your culture to sanitize it for what people in Australia might believe your culture is.
It's the notion that there's somehow a static version of what culinary culture from any country looks like and it can't evolve is a bit nonsensical. I mean, Vegemite-flavored chocolate is an abomination against humanity, but other things can evolve naturally.
Exactly. You know, those kind of fusion abominations tend to go away when people realise they're a bad idea. But frankly, the people in Okinawa love their Goya Champuru with Spam, and that's why it's been served that way for the last 50 years.
I am interested, though, did you find things that belong to an older tradition? And if so, was it a similar tradition to elsewhere in mainland Japan? Or was there something that you would think of as a peculiarly Okinawan flavour?
Definitely. There's a lot of things that you can go all the way back to identify this Okinawan flavour, but it has been the inverted commas, melting pot for such a long time. They have a their own version of sake there, which is a distilled and brewed beverage called awamori, made with a black fermented mold rather than the white koji mold that they use in the mainland. They use a black koji mold in Okinawa, and that actually originally came from Thailand. The goya champuru, as I mentioned, came from Indonesia. And there was a time, actually, where that black koji mold that they used to make awamori disappeared. You know, Okinawa was ravaged by the Second World War. There was enormous battles, and almost every distillery and brewery for this awamori was destroyed. And a lot of the original strains, like the heritage strains of this mold, as anyone knows, yeasts and molds and those kind of cultures are so important to flavour, had been destroyed by bombs and lost, and people fleeing their traditional breweries. And then I think it was only about in the 1970s that there was a researcher in Kyoto who just came across something and went, oh, actually, this is this extinct mold from Okinawa that has just been sitting in our fridges here, and we should send it back so they can start making awamori again. So they've now returned back to this traditional awamori making culture. They always made it, but just with slightly different molds throughout that lost period.
So you've been back, as far as I understand, about 30 times, is that right? I mean, since 2004, 30 trips back is pretty good. Clearly, you have the Okinawa bug. And what I want to know is, what do you take away from there when you're not there? What are the things that kind of now define your life that are your secret Okinawan traits?
It's like any island culture, it's pretty relaxed. And I love, you know, as much as I got a bit irritated when people were criticizing our approach to Okinawan food on destination flavor, I always think about that. You know, if there's something that I kind of turn my nose up when I go somewhere, I go, okay, well, this is not my place to say whether that's good or bad. This is just the way it is. And to be honest, I think it reflects a lot on Australian food culture as well. We tend to want our food culture here to be something that perhaps it isn't. We want to have the history of France. We want to have the vibrant flavors of Thailand, and we want the serenity and zen-like nature of Japanese cuisine. But we can't be any one or more of those things. We kind of have to take Australian cuisine for what it is, this kind of mixture of Mediterranean and British heritage with Southeast Asian influence that makes it really quite special.
It's a wonderful idea, even if it does include spam. Just finally, I'm really curious, have you introduced anyone else to it? Having loved it so much yourself, have you taken loved ones over there to show them the place that you adore?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I've got a bottle of awamori aging with my son's name on it in a cave in Okinawa as we speak. It's been there for the last 3 years, and he and I will go back there when he's 20 or so, and we can crack that open. But I've been there with my wife a few times. I've been there with groups of friends many, many times, and they all love it. You know, I haven't actually been there with a member of my family who shares my heritage, that kind of mixed English, Chinese, Penang, Malaysian island champuru heritage. And I just wonder if, you know, if I took my brother or my sister there, would they feel the same way about it as I do?
Well, I'm glad that you've shared your obsession with so many other people already and shared it with us today. It's been really terrific to have a chance to talk. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Michael.
Adam Liao is host of Destination Flavour on SBS. He's the author of many cookbooks and Okinawa's adopted son. I think he was even mistaken for an Okinawan once in Tokyo. You can listen back to that conversation or any previous stories from the show on the ABC Radio app or subscribe to the podcast via iTunes.